Okay, I'd like to call to order this special meeting today, Monday, December 4th, 2017. The time is 7:04 p.m. Joe, take order.
Ms. Faulkner?
Here.
Mr. Antonetz?
Here.
Mr. Preby?
Here.
Ms. Ruler?
Here.
First item on the agenda is the public hearing for... Do I call the public meeting order for this? Open up this portion of the meeting.
Yep, we'll open the hearing at the time on the clock and read the legal notice.
Okay, I call the following hearing to order at 7:04 p.m. Nobody here in the audience, so we'll bypass the swearing in. Special meeting, Genoa Township Zoning Commission initiated zoning text amendment ZC 2017-05 to revise, edit, add, and/or delete zoning provisions within the following locations of the Genoa Township resolution. Article 4, definitions. Article 9, planned residential district, PRD, and Article 18, sign standards, and to add Article 5A, township planning standards, in accordance with Section 2602.01 of the Genoa Township Comprehensive Plan. Start with staff report from Joe.
Certainly. I don't have a formal report for you this evening. I think we're all pretty familiar with this text. We've all worked on it at numerous meetings. I will note that the legal notice of the meeting was printed and published on November 24th, 2017 in the Gazette, posted at the Genoa Township Hall on November 1st, 2017. We do have five exhibits here. Exhibit A would be the legal notice. Exhibit B, the affidavit of advertisement. Exhibit C will be the sign-in sheet from this evening. Exhibit D is the draft amendment dated October 30th, 2017. And Exhibit E, the DCRPC minutes of November 30, 2017. Those are draft minutes that I forwarded out to everyone today. Like I said, we are very familiar with the text, worked on it prior to the initiation, so I don't think there's really a need for me to go through page by page. I think this hearing was ultimately really the opportunity for the number one, to adhere to the ORC requirement that we have this hearing. Number two, to provide the public the formal opportunity to give comments. I know we've heard a lot of comments the past few meetings on at least the density and comprehensive plan side of this topic. Pretty much quiet on the signs. End of that discussion. Can't say I'm terribly surprised. That doesn't usually draw people out. So I'm going to just conclude that report and turn it back over to you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. I think it would probably be prudent to go on record of recognizing the review and comment by the Delaware County Regional Planning Commission in November.
Correct. Yes, November 30th.
And the written response was pretty much conditional approval?
Yes, and I think the only condition of approval was check with the prosecutor's office, if I recall correctly.
Which is why
we have Mr. King here with us this evening.
Right, which we've done, and everybody has seen Mr. King's email review.
So he is here tonight to answer any questions, or Andrew, is there any statements you'd like to make before we go any further?
Well, I mean, I'll just leave it up to you guys, it's sort of what you want to ask in a public session. I know this is sort of a contentious issue that's been litigated, so I'll let you guys sort of take the lead on it. But I mean, I think you have the general opinion of what our concerns are. And for what it's worth, I bounce this off of Chris Betts too. So when I say we, I mean, I really mean we. I went to the chief of the division and said, hey, what do you think about this? And I described it to him. And so we sort of ended up independently in the same place. As I sort of alluded to in the opinion, the intent is fine. Restricting density and acreage and all that sort of stuff is a proper method of zoning, and the Supreme Court has said so. So I think for the board, it's just a matter of how to get there, not a matter of it can't be done. It just how to get there. So that's, like I said, I'm happy to answer any questions or talk about it at length, but I just sort of thought I would talking to Joe and everything, that if you had it in writing, you could sort of digest it that way, and then we could go on record with whatever you felt was appropriate.
Well, I think we should clarify that the issue is primarily the section 5A, right?
Yeah,
5.02A, or yeah, the sign. Joe, I mean, yeah, I guess I should. I mean, Joe and I talked at length about the sign. I even think I made some suggested modifications.
Yeah, at one point you did.
So, yeah, and I mean, just as a, I guess by way of introduction to this, and I think this was brought up before, that there has been some litigation in federal courts over signs. There was one just up in the Northern District, I think not too long ago, I shared with you, in the Supreme Court case about the temporary signs and all that sort of stuff. So when Joe and I were talking about it, I think it came up as an enforcement matter, mm-hmm. and then it was, we said, well, there's a problem with the resolution as written, and this was an attempt to sort of avoid the due process First Amendment issues that the courts have been fond of recently. So may not be perfect, but I think you guys are on much better footing with this than what you were before. And I only say that because, and it's hard to predict this sort of thing. I mean, it was either the same term or the term before they said that license plates weren't speech and you can, you know, be forced to have whatever message on it. But then all of a sudden now signs are get this higher status of protection than they ever had before. So, I mean, you sort of never really know until a case comes up in this area what's too far. But I think we erred on being fairly, mm-hmm. as trying to be as content neutral as possible to avoid any claims. So everything's sort of regulating more dimension, time, location, not so much content.
So to your point, Mr. Chairman, yes, I would agree. I think the newly added Article 5A and then the revision, the subsequent revision that sort of wrote along with that Article 9 would have been the two areas that I think the prosecutor's opinion primarily covered.
I have not had an extensive amount of time to go out and look at what other townships have done to address this issue, but it does appear that flipping the zoning resolution, as we talked about the last time, is at least in part the solution other townships have come to. So specifically, if the zoning commission would like to do any homework off the record so that we could have a more informed discussion at our next meeting, I would look at Violet Township in Fairfield County, Clark County's regulations relating to the unincorporated portions of their townships. They chose to take that approach, which is they kind of swept up all the unincorporated portions of their townships and put them under one set of Clark County regulations. And Allen Township and Union County, all of which who decided to base their zoning resolution on setting districts, and inside of those districts saying, build whatever you want, but here are the restrictions. So that you didn't have the problem of saying you could build one PRD one place and one PRD under different standards other places. What they said were, these are the rules in these areas. Build whatever you want, but understand these are the restrictions. They generally look to frontage, square footage coverage of structures, which is a very interesting way to kind of go about that. And then some of them even included a mathematical formula saying that when you had so much frontage and so much depth, then you could have so much coverage. So if you can make your PRD work under those restrictions, then by all means build in that district. They went so far as to name their districts low, medium, high density, specifically to call out what they were trying to accomplish in those places. In some cases, they tried to do it by overlay, but for the most part, not. They put an overlay in their main street corridor, trying to create opportunities up and down a corridor, which might have more trouble describing a geography, which was for them a major commercial thoroughfare, which had been established as a thoroughfare, and saying, okay, down this corridor, which might span a large amount of geography and not be easy to define, we're willing to consider these sorts of things, low-rise, apartment buildings, what have you. So if you take a look at those three examples, there's at least three I was able to pull up in the space of 30 minutes that the zoning resolution, rather than define their space by the type of housing, instead took a comprehensive plan approach, which is to define the districts in which housing would occur and then set standards for those districts. And then not put any particular restriction on the type of housing or the type of thing that could be built there, simply saying if you chose to build it, you had to meet those requirements. And they do it through a number of entirely specific and yet entirely open standards for describing different types of activities. That would be a major overhaul of our zoning resolution. But it would start to get after the issue which we're concerned about, which is clearly we're more concerned about where people put things than how they put what they want to put there, if that makes sense. So it may be that we have to adopt some type of standard along those lines. I didn't get a chance to look at all of the different townships in Delaware County. I don't know that we have faced this issue quite in the same way in Delaware County, although I know there's a lot going on up by the outlet mall where they're trying to redefine their standards there. Maybe there's a lesson to be learned in some of these others, so I would encourage you to look at those or find other examples.
Sandra, what were the counties again? Clark, Union?
Clark County itself, Clark as County. A county, decided to create county regulations. Delaware County hasn't done that. Delaware County has let every township kind of operate in its own space, but Clark County swept in all of its unincorporated sections of all of its various townships. So they have Green Township, Green Township and a bunch of others, which are largely undeveloped areas, so they kind of swept them all together. So that's sort of an unusual approach. The other is Allen Township in Union County, which is near Marysville, and Violet Township in Fairfield County, which is down near Pickerington. And obviously none of those are in Delaware County, but maybe there's something to be learned from the folks near us who are dealing with the same set of issues.
Just piggybacking off of that, the county does have a rural zoning commission, but it's for Marlboro, Thompson, and I can't remember.
Radnor,
I think.
Well, that's
so,
good to know. Places that don't have enough population
that's
have
where,
done
yes,
that.
Exactly.
And that's really why Clark did it, but Clark went to the trouble of creating the districts. So I looked for places that had went to the trouble of trying to define the density they wanted to see in the different places, and I would equate most of those examples as the closest to what we've tried to do here on the comprehensive plan, which is state for a variety of reasons we want a variety of different densities. And many of them also talk about preserving particular natural resources. So what often comes up in this discussion is Hoover, the fact that we have Hoover and land near Hoover, and we have concerns about our ability to protect that as a natural space. We have the Big Walnut Creek, which flows through. We have a number of other natural land fixtures, and some of these also tried to address their concerns. So like us who talk about slopes and ravines and preserved areas, they also do the same thing. So they looked a little bit more like that. I mean, you can't argue that places like Pickerington have not experienced explosive exponential growth over the last few years, and they've had some of the same challenges, which is all the area around them is growing, and they have a commercial strip that is growing. And yet at the same time, they're not prepared to be turned into nothing but a bunch of housing lots and commercial businesses. So I think there might be something there to look at. I'm not saying they're the end-all and be-all, but there's somebody who has flipped their resolution, and some of them started that way. So they got to start that way, and they got to finish that way. But they turned the resolution less around the type of housing and more into the districts they wanted to see operating. And your comment earlier, Joe, was that you had concerns about overlays. I think we in general, I won't say we in general, I as a member, the longstanding member of the Zoning Commission, have seen the overlay be less than successful. And so to the extent that we can be more clear with the rules, I think that's worthwhile. Because I think overlays are generally pretty confusing to folks.
And I was going to say, the when Liberty had an issue about density and wanting to control it in certain places, that's how they did it, is they did it as an overlay mm-hmm. along the 23 corridor. So I know that's an issue. Joe and I talked about that a little bit, because that's a solution that we came up with for another township, was doing an overlay in a specific geographic area, which was sort of the way this was framed out.
Right.
So, but I mean, yeah. Like you said, you can sort of retool it another direction if you don't want to keep the geographical.
Well, the difficulty we have is that I haven't heard anyone from the public express an interest in turning State Route 3 into State Route 23. And so in the absence of that, it's a much larger issue for the township as a whole, because most of the major collectors or major arterials in the township, we haven't heard a lot of support for sacrificing those areas to higher density in order to preserve other areas for lower density.
Yeah.
If I heard more of that from the public, then I would say, yep, we should definitely take a look at that and start planning for that and draw those developers to those areas, because then you have something to give them in exchange for leaving the other areas alone. But that isn't what I've been hearing. So I'm sort of responding to the trustees and what the public is saying.
No, and I wasn't saying that you have to pick a state route as the corridor.
No,
I'm just saying that was an issue they had. I think they wanted to control they wanted a commercial development along 23,
sure.
Plan development. That was sort of how they did it geographically. They did a geographic overlay and said, this is what we want. So.
Yeah, I would agree generally the corridor approach probably isn't really the best approach to solve the issue we're trying to solve. I do think there's other issues where that could be a viable option.
Well, Liberty 23 is a very short portion of
sure.
the day.
Yeah,
And what has been decided on other sides of 23 are guiding the development that happens in that area for them.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
You can be stacked tight and then be open and then be stacked tight again, and you don't really get the benefit of what you want. Sure. And the truth is, actually, that is entirely analogous to what's happening in Genoa Township. To the south of us, Westerville has decided that they're going to push their strongest commercial districts to the north, which actually form our southern boundary. And Sunbury is poised for an explosion of growth, coming from the changes to I-71, the outlet mall, and other things designed to drive people there, and the Sunbury Parkway, or whatever they're going to call that connecting road that goes across. So we are going to be bounded on both sides by explosive growth.
And then New Albany on one day will be on the east.
Right, and that has taken more time than you'd expect, and given that forecasters are predicting another dip or downturn in the marketplace, we might see not a 2008 pullback, but we'll see some kind of pullback from capital expenditures should that happen. So it's really up to us at this time to figure out what do we want that to look like. And I think that the challenge we have is our zoning resolution has served us fine. When we felt confident that the comprehensive plan was the document under which we could measure all things in the light. And what we're getting is consistent advice that that document doesn't hold the sway it should. And so it's up to us to decide what belongs in the resolution and what things we should leave up to decisions by developers or the trustees.
Yeah, and I think the other factor that's really changed here is really the sewer conversation. Even up to a few years ago, we were mostly under the impression sewer, even north of Big Walnut Road on this side, planning area 4, was going to be pretty hard to come by. And for one reason or another, that's changed, and I think that's what's really specifically prompted a lot of people for this whole conversation to have to be reopened is, for the longest time, that density number, no one was really terribly concerned about, I don't think, because sewer wasn't there, so even getting to that number was going to be very difficult. Now it seems like sewer is readily available, so to speak, and so it's caused a lot more of that pressure than we've felt in the past, I think. So there's just circumstances, I think, that have just changed. That
we knew that Genoa Township would reach build-out at some point.
Yep.
Just a question of whether it would reach build-out before it would be under threat for annexation or available sewer, what have you. I mean, every comprehensive plan before the last one said we'd be at build-out by now.
Yeah, that's true.
And we are not, and I don't see us as being a build-out in the foreseeable future for the same reasons we've talked about, which is other things closer to that available sewer will develop first, and then people will begin infilling the patches in between.
And there are still sewer challenges in the northwest portion of the township.
Absolutely. Agreed.
In regards to infrastructure. So I understand and I agree with that the overlay as instituted here historically have not worked out terribly well. They haven't really, I think, done what they were intended to do. Now, I do think with some modifications and with an eye on sort of all the ramifications, we could institute those systems if we wanted to try to prevent some of the failings of the past. I think one of the big issues is if you have this overlay over here, but here's the path on the right that you can just as easily take, and you're not forced to go down the path on the left, if the path on the left looks harder, is more restrictive, and has all these bells and whistles and things you got to deal with, I'm going to just choose to go down the path on the right that seems to give me more of what I want and has less restrictions. So I think if we were going to use the overlay, we'd have to try to design them in sort of fact where you almost force people down path B on the left as opposed to saying, well, I'm just going to take the path of less resistance on the right. It's the path that I'm familiar with, that I've dealt with numerous times before. So I know one of the things Andrew and I were talking about in regards to overlay, and I'm just throwing this out there for discussion purposes. I'm not making this as a formal proposal or anything, just again for discussion. Is he and I were talking about, well, do you do like a planned residential overlay in the density, which seems to be the driving issue in a lot of this conversation, is more or less based on whatever the base zoning district that exists on that property currently is. So if it's a rural residential parcel, that zone parcel, that property only qualifies for overlay district, planned overlay district A, which you only get, certain amount of density. But if the property zone suburban residential, you use planned overlay district B, and that gives you a little bit more density because historically those districts have been further south. Suburban residential already allows for smaller parcels under subdivision anyway. So that was an approach we talked about. Another approach with the overlays was sort of bringing back years ago before, maybe over 10 years ago, there used to be a conservation district overlay for the Hoover watershed. And for some reason, they got rid of it. I don't know why. I haven't really found the minutes to really explain exactly why that was. But it had more restrictions. It said, okay, here's all our zoning rules, but if you're in this parcel that's in this watershed, your acreage requirements, you got to do like 1 acre. You can't do, I can't even remember what the acreage under the zoning was back then, but because you're in the Hoover watershed, we have a few more extra protections to protect the watershed here. So you could utilize the same concept, where really, I think you could maybe almost keep the PRD, and you just sort of throw that overlay on top of any parcels wholly or partially within the Hoover watershed, and you put in whatever provisions you want, protective provisions for density, setbacks, you know, you name it, that would be related to protection of the watershed that could achieve some of those goals. Because I'm sensing the desire is to still try to achieve the overall spirit and intent of the comprehensive plan was to more or less get less dense as we went further north and specifically protect critical resources, and namely Hoover, as I think we've all agreed to. So just a couple of options in regards to going to the one that's based on the base zoning district. Andrew and I are going to have some discussions as to whether or not you could really just keep the existing PRD district, amend the text to make it an overlay district, make that applicable to the suburban residential. And my question for Andrew was, could we do that without basically be a rezoning of all those properties without the property owner's permission? Because that would be the biggest hurdle, because you can't just proactively rezone someone to a planned district. But
So since we know, though, that, sure, that you can't stop people from asking for whatever they want, what about the overlay magic keeps me from going down path A? The path I know where I ask for the divergence. I get when I agree to all the conditions of the mm-hmm. overlay, I get a one-step process. Normally that's the payoff. That's what our PRRCD was designed to do, which was give you a pass. Yeah. Meet all the requirements, move on, one pass, we don't have much to say about it, go straight to your plan, build like hell. Like that was sort of the gift that was given there, and almost nobody's been flirted with that. So what stops me, what part of the Ohio Supreme Court or Ohio Revised Code 519 says, when I develop an overlay for a district, that is the sole remedy to me in front of the zoning resolution, in front of the zoning commission, in front of the trustees? Or is it really just, we set up this set of criteria, and you still go down your path of, well, I don't like this or I don't like that, so I'm not going to go in the overlay, I'm going to go straight down the divergence path, I'm going to take it to the trustees, I'm going to get a vote?
I think that's a great question. Honestly,
is there something that does that?
Because I don't know if there's a way we can prevent someone from making an ask. I mean, there's nothing we can really do to prevent someone from asking for planned commercial on Plum Road. I'm not saying anyone's asking for that. I'm just saying someone could ask for that. It's clearly not even remotely close to the comprehensive plan.
Right.
But someone could still ask for it. Now, I think we'd have a little bit stronger leg to stand on in that case. But, I mean, Andrew, correct me if I'm wrong. Is there really anything, I mean, I think we could do almost everything short of saying thou shall not use this district ever, and we're not going to diverge on it, but you really can't stop someone from at least making the ask, right?
No, but I think where it helps you is when me or whoever's defending it goes into court and can tell the judge, hey, this was a completely reasonable exercise of the zoning powers that were given to it, because here the developer, you know, had to meet these standards. Could have met it, but it was just here. They just, and I made this argument with Cardinal. I mean, they wanted to make more money, and that was, they could have made money with the standards as is, but they wanted to make even more money, and the court sort of just drove.
Well, yeah,
there's nothing that stops
that argument. Is every one of these?
I understand.
Essence of that is every single zoning action that's here, right? It requires the trustees to say what the zoning commission told you is not okay, so we're going to stand by that. It requires the prosecutor's office to stand and say, what is zoning if not the ability to impartially control the usage of land within the borders of the township?
Well, that's what I was saying. I think the argument would be easier if anybody could say, here's the reasons why. Like what Joe was saying, like there's a historic suburban residential district in the South. This goes back to the to 87 or whatever it was. You know, this has been part of a longstanding thing. This is how development's been. You know, numerous other developers have come in and done this. So if you tie the overlay district to that, and we can point to all, well, this is where sewer's readily available. This is where Polaris Parkway is at. This is where 3 is. You know, there's a lot of ingress, egress points. The roads can carry it all. There's plenty of public utilities and, you know, storm sewers, the whole nine yards. I think it's a lot easier argument than if they go up north and say, well, we want that same density. You say, well, you could get it down south or further down south. And and you could say all the reasons why that makes more sense down south. Like Joe said, there might be challenges for sewer up here, or because, you know, every 5 years the stormwater permit gets more restrictive. So you can sort of make the argument, well, if the developer's not able to put in storm sewers and carry away the water and make sure the effluent meets certain standards, then, you know, we're going to have a permit issue that will come back and bite the township. So, I mean, those are all things that you can sort of point to. And if you deal with that proactively, then I can, again, anybody, I'm just saying me because I'm your current representative, go into court and say, well, these are all the reasons why that this was the standard, and these are all the reasons why a divergence doesn't make sense and why they acted completely reasonable in denying the divergence. And I think another thing we talked about too is that probably the standard for the divergence in the resolution probably needs to be tightened up just a little bit too, because it invites right now comparisons to neighboring lots, and that caused a problem like in the Cardinal case. It says, you know, like the adjoining lots which were in different districts, and then it's like, well, what do you do when the resolution says make an apples to oranges comparison? Right, so, I mean, there are things like that that you can do to also sort of backstop it. But, I mean, Joe's ultimately right. I mean, they can ask for a rezone, they can ask for a divergence anytime, any place. But the fortunate thing is that if they ask for a rezone, there's always the referendum threat behind it. So, if you have a really solid, unassailable plan, well, I shouldn't say unassailable, but a very solid, strong plan and a very strong guided discretion, what's going to be their argument? Of course, we just don't like the outcome. And then that's time, effort, and money they got to sue and hope they draw a good judge is really the bottom line. And thus far, I think you haven't had, I mean, Romanelli sort of backed off of it. Cardinal didn't, but I mean.
Yeah, but more importantly, when you talk about the referendum threat, in order to have a referendum threat, you need to have an engaged, interested, and invested resident population. So, in part, you know, we're seeing more activity at these meetings than we had historically, with folks coming forward with a very clear view of what they want in the township. We can discuss the concept of the vocal minority, but the truth is the only people who are vocal are the people who are vocal. That's all you can hear, is what they're talking about. And those are the people who are most likely to step up to a referendum challenge. So there's something about that we have to sort of take into account here, which is the silent minority or the silent majority also doesn't show up to vote. And they also don't show up to care about different things. So, you know, part of it is understanding what the tolerance is in the township for cutting deals. Because we came to the township, now most of the board, maybe Mr. Antonetz and maybe Mr. Preby being the exception, with a condominium style clause we tried to put together where we thought, all right, maybe what we should do is we should lock down where these go, and we should lock down what that density looks like, and we should say, you know what, that's it. We're not going to diverge anything beyond that. You know, we've given you as good a standard. And to a man, the public comment was, no, thank you. Now, I've since heard from residents who've walked different walkabouts, oh, now I get what you were talking about. Because of the rules you would have prescribed, this could have been considered here. Well, that's all fun and good. But I think that, you know, we've had a relatively engaged population, although always a minority. And they're trying to tell us something about the way the township works. So we just have to be mindful if we're going to create overlay districts and create situations that are more advantageous to builders to build in particular places with a once and done or what have you, there's still going to be significant concerns raised by the public about giving it away.
Yeah.
So it's really going to come down to us as to whether or not we're following the comprehensive plan of the zoning resolution and the trustees about whether they're going to follow the comprehensive plan of the zoning resolution.
So back to the overlay concept. On the second one I was talking about, the one that would be related to the Hoover watershed, you could make that so that is a mandatory overlay, where it is not a question of whether or not you're going to use it. You are going to use it, because it's the same thing you would probably do with, what, like a floodplain?
And if I don't like it, I'm going to diverge it. I'm going to ask for a divergence.
Well, I don't
I'm going
think
to take an application
well, see,
of
you can't diverge from a whole zone.
Well, see, that's
right?
What do you think about that?
That's where, I mean, to put sort of the extreme example, this is a little bit like the adult entertainment districts. If you go too far and say, we won't allow any of this stuff in my township, then you get hit with that. But what Joe's saying is that if you sort of say, in this area, we're not going to allow a planned residential district, or, you know, these have to be this
way. We're going to allow them, but you've got these extra set of rules that you're going to have to play by because you're in this watershed, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you can always defend it with something, then you're in much better footing, and that's...
So if I'm defending natural resources,
right,
as opposed to quality of life, that's a more compelling argument. I mean, that's my problem.
Not necessarily.
I can put anything I want against that. Like, everyone will recognize saving Indiana Betts. Had him across the street from us for a long time. People will recognize saving Hoover. But I guess what I'm trying to say is, you know, this feels a little like, you know, a little Animal Farm. Some pigs are more equal than others, which is some legal arguments around protection of particular natural resources are more valid than others. And if that's the case, then we just need to get to the bottom of what that is and put those protections in and roll the dice with the rest of it.
Well,
but I think your point is if we pick out a handful of places to protect, we'll have better luck than trying to protect it all.
And I got into the watershed because I picked that feature because it's defined by a national organization. It's very easy to produce the proof that we just didn't sort of arbitrarily draw lines on a plan. The natural geography of the earth, that's how it runs. So to me, that's why it's more easily defensible, because I can easily produce a map that shows those boundaries and why, and a whole bunch of literature within a pretty simple search and research project of why watersheds are important and why protecting them are important. Mm-hmm. I think the quality of life issues, why I stay defensible, can sometimes be a little bit more hard to prove from a factual basis. Because you have to, you know, you got to hire now an engineering firm to do the traffic study that's contrary to the county's traffic study. You have to do some sort of like real, I don't even want to use the word survey. I mean, you have to do a lot more research that's not readily available. When you do it sort of on something environmental, I think it's just a lot, or based on a corridor, it's just a lot easier to rationalize your case.
I don't disagree with that. I'm just trying to figure out how those recommendations fit into the kind of the overall scheme of things.
Sure.
And so I think you can solve some problems that way, but maybe not all of them.
The Zeltig case that I talked about in my email to you guys, where it's sort of, there's a two-step test that the Supreme Court uses. I mean, like any other test, you can shepherdize the cases and find their slightly different versions of the same test over time. But, you know, just for the sake of clarity, I use this one, and it's the zoning classification denies the property owner economic viable use of their land, and it does not substantially advance a legitimate interest in health, safety, welfare, community. So the second one goes back to the statute, that the statute's, you know, again, your grant coming from the General Assembly, you're not a home rule place. You can say you have to take what the General Assembly gave you, and part of zoning is linked back to that. So the court says if you can't link it back to your statutory grant, you're in trouble. So that's why part of what I was aiming at in the opinion and now is that if it's just sort of like, well, that's, you know, we like the deer, well, how do you link that back to your authority? You have to show in some sort of numbers like, well, you know, there's not enough available sewer taps, or, you know, the road is not sufficient for this, or, you know, it's a walking community because we have an elementary school and then across the street's a senior community, and, you know, putting this McDonald's in here just doesn't fit because it'll drive up traffic and, you know, potentially harm kids.
Didn't you say that this density restriction prohibited building on lots of less than 5 acres?
I'm sorry, what was that?
It restricted any building on lots less than 5 acres.
Yes,
so
I believe
it's a great example of really terrible facts making the law. So there's a standard. I mean, we haven't yet passed anything in the zoning resolution that says you can't build on less than 5 acres or less than 2 acres or less than 1 acre.
Granville, where I live, has that.
And I don't disagree with that. But I guess my point is that that's a terrible standard. Well, it may be the law, and there may be lots of cases behind it. It's a terrible standard for us to attempt to apply here.
Sure, no.
Because it's not meaningful guidance. And I think what we're looking for is some meaningful guidance. Now, I hear, you know, let's protect the Hoover area. Okay, that might be a meaningful piece of guidance. I think there's more on the table than that, which is, what should we be doing to accomplish the goals, not of the zoning commission?
Well, here's one of the questions I had for Joe.
Sure.
Is, how did you pick the geographical areas that you did? So, like, if I'm going into court and they say, you know, this violates equal protection, this violates the uniformity because you've got all these different geographical districts, there's no rational basis for it. what's my response? Right. Like, I don't know, Your Honor, I don't know why they divided it the way they did. I don't know why. So that, I mean, that's sort of what I'm saying when you, if you're going to create anything, if you can just point to something, whether it's,
right.
you know, we need to preserve the water, we don't want excess
Joe
pollution.
Was just talking, though, about the history. So one of the things you talked about was history. This township has been divided into these districts for a long time. The fact that the lines are getting blurrier because development is outpacing the existence of the roads doesn't actually change the underlying guidelines. So if you're talking about us updating the rationale to reflect something that makes sense to you today, that's one thing. But early in this discussion, we started talking about the concept that the history of the township means something to what we're doing here. So if you ask me for that history, I could probably articulate it for you in a few paragraphs, but you'd have to decide whether or not you'd stand for the township on that basis.
Well, you're always my client, but I mean, what it comes down to is I think there's sort of two different ways to approach this. The history may matter as to what you're going to do going forward, how you write the regulations and the rules. Because you can mm-hmm. say, like I said, that the suburban residential area was, again, Joe sent me some of the stuff. It looks like it was sort of done when Westerville was in its annexation heyday, and there was some feeling like this might either insulate it from or mm-hmm. sort of stave it off because you're sort of doing it yourself and you're not giving it over to Westerville. Okay, that makes sense, but how is that a legally defensible standard when I go to court and say, well, you can't get it because in 1990 we were worried, Genoa was worried about Westerville annexing. And that's what, so, I mean, I think in one hand the history can guide sort of how you're going to draw the maps now, how you're going to do the overlays, and why you want to do it. But at the end of the day, if you want them to be upheld and defensible, you're going to have some quantitative or some objective qualitative facts to use. And that and I sort of what I mentioned to Joe is, you know, the comp plan is not a bad place for that sort of thing, where, you know, evidentiary, you can say, well, this is kind of why we chose to head this direction, because mm-hmm. You know, it gives some flavor and some context to it where it's not the binding law. Or, you know, you can have it in other documents or, you know, statements. I mean, you can create a million different zoning documents if you want, but the resolution has to be defensible on its face. And then if it's challenged as being unreasonable or a constitutional violation, we need to be able to go one layer deeper and say, well, here's all the facts that supported the board's decision. And if we can't go that one layer deeper, that's when you're going to have more situations like Cardinal, even though I think Cardinal is kind of a bad case, but you're going to have more situations like that where the court's going to go, eh, you guys made a wrong call. And
so what I can tell in regards to the planning areas, not to get too far off topic, the line right. between 4 and 5 is basically the Hoover watershed line. They followed the lot lines instead of the watershed line because the watershed doesn't know the lot where the lot lines are. So they did their best to try, as far as I can tell. Between 1 and 4 and 5, Big Walnut Road was, to the best I can tell, Westerville at one point, when they were doing all their plans for how are we going to grow and annex all the area around us, looked as far north as Big Walnut Road, because generally speaking, that's where Westerville School District went up. Now, I can tell you by the year 2000, I just pulled their plan last week, they're already admitting by 2000, there's a lot of development going up in Genoa, the returns are rapidly diminishing, it's becoming increasingly unlikely we're ever going to probably annex further into Orange or Genoa because of what's happened up there. Not to say they couldn't try, but I agree with Andrew. I do think suburban residential and planned residential zoning and the 87 code combination and why you see Highland Lakes and stuff was probably driven by the fact they were trying to defend the southern border. There was no threat of that to the north or the east, so that's why they've been the way that they are. In regards to why 2 and 3 are separated, I'm sure there's a reason. I have yet to find it. I'm sure there was some sort of rationale for it at one point. I just haven't found it. And 6 is basically just around the little commercial node at Maxtown and I think that follows basically the zoning boundaries.
I guess I do have a question. So say, just say for instance, the divider in 4 areas was the 2 roads out here. Okay, Big Walnut and Old Rafferty. Mm-hmm. And each of the corners were in a different area. What makes one person be able to be restricted more than the person on the other corner? Just because they're in a different, they may both have 50 acres, but this area has to be restricted in one way and that in another. And I can see that being a problem for the homeowners, which is a problem because they are a taxpayer.
I think that's what Andrew's saying. If you've got a cornfield that fronts a collector street that's approximately 40 acres, and one's on the left side of the road and one's on the right side of the road, there's going to be a difficulty in arguing why they're substantially
because
different.
Short of a township boundary, in which case that exact event would occur. So Genoa Township is on the opposite side from, is it Berkshire next one up?
Yep.
I drive through there every time. So on one side of Plum Road is Genoa Township, and the other side is Berkshire.
But Sandra, they're paying in their own townships. They are being represented in their townships. This
exactly.
is one township. They're all paying the same amount of money, and yet they have different restrictions on when they sell their property.
Because in the absence of it just being a township boundary, there wouldn't be any other boundaries. And the truth is that as time has evolved, what I have a problem with here is that history is good enough for some things, but not good enough for others. Okay? And that's fine. But I can turn around and make the same argument that now the defense of the north of the township is more important because the threat comes from Sunbury. Whereas you might have said the defense of the township to the north was more important in the south because it came from Westerville. So I can wait every 5 years and change where the threat's coming from. It's coming from New Albany. We should be careful on that side of Hoover. Whereas arguably in the absence of a Hoover watershed, they can develop right up to the boundary of Hoover Reservoir, and more likely than not, sewer comes from there.
So
because they come across. So I can't. It's all a subjective view of how the facts and circumstances turn out. But the big Walnut Road thing may not mean anything now, but 20 years ago it did mean something. Mm-hmm.
But things change, and that's what we have to kind of keep that in mind. History is very important, but you can't just keep going backwards. You have to continue to go forwards with what is left here and try to do the right thing.
I don't disagree with that. And there has been development north of Big Walnut Road and east of State Route 3.
Right.
In a considered way.
My just concern is for the people that own these properties that are in our township, that we should protect them as well, not just the people who live on certain areas that want to protect the deer. And I had four deer go through my backyard, and I live in a, you know, planning area that, you know, is a little denser, but we still have deer that go through there, and I love seeing them, but I still feel like you can't stop progress completely if it's going on all around you and there's people that own property that want to sell and develop it, and we can fit it in to our area and it can still be
if
safe.
You can fit it in to the area.
Right.
So that's, but that's the point, is
but,
that
but not everything's going to be exactly perfect. That's why there's availability of divergences. You can't,
and that's why
say,
the overlay
the rules
will fully
rule,
protect
rule.
The township.
Yeah.
I can see why you feel that way.
Yeah.
But I will tell you that I have never suggested that anybody who held onto their farmland through their family all this time should be the last people who can't develop. Right? I mean,
that's
we've
right.
had people who've come in and said, hey, wait a minute, it's my turn. I saved this money for retirement. I should be allowed to develop.
Right.
And I don't disagree with that as a fundamental matter.
Right.
What I would suggest is that as there are more residents here, there are more voices. And what residents, unfortunately, are telling us as they come here is, I moved into a neighborhood zone like that, and I don't want the next one to come. And I find that very interesting as an observation, because you'd only live here because somebody built a neighborhood like that that you can live in.
But I also don't think that, if you built a property 30 years ago, you're going to assume it's going to stay the same way 30 years later, that everybody's going to want what you wanted 30 years ago.
I don't disagree with that.
I think that's what we're hearing from mostly.
I think the balance to that discussion, if I were going to make the balance of that discussion, is that when people move into a piece of property, they have expectations around their neighbors near them. So everybody who's ever come to me and said, that farm field next to me is developing, I thought, really? Because if you wanted it to be a farm field, you would have left it a farm field.
Or you
would
have bought
it. Mean,
I mean,
but
the
that
key
doesn't,
is just
and
buy
I meant
it.
Buy it and leave it that way.
It's for
but,
sale.
But
buy
that
it.
Does not mean, that does not mean that the next person can pile onto mistakes the township has made, or overzone, overdone. It doesn't mean that the standard is always increasing to what the last measure was.
No, but you do have to go with what is in demand, or you're not going to develop it in anything.
Well,
and
I don't know. I mean, what define demand?
Demand is what, I mean,
what's going on in the marketplace from a real estate standpoint?
No, what's going on demographics.
Okay.
The baby boomers are getting older.
Okay. But what I would say is that, you know, market demand and all that stuff.
No, it's
can
about
be relevant, but
we
also have, as I talk about, we have a playbook, a comprehensive plan, and we have our rules of engagement, our zoning regulations. So, quite honestly, if you're sitting there, we'll see how your parcel of 40 acres, whatever, fits into that, and we'll talk about it. and the landowner rights as much as we as a commission and trustees also have. So I you know, you always want to be attentive to what's going on in the marketplace, but I also know what we've kind of molded this township way before I ever moved in, and it seems resoundingly what we're doing right now is receptive to what the people want.
So I just want to circle back to sort of answer this question and then just sort of make a comment off of what you said. Is inevitably with any line drawing, there's some unfairness. You know, where the county lines are, you know, sales tax differs, you know, where the township boundary is versus municipal boundary. I mean, like we just had the issue with Galena and the cemetery was in their boundary, so guess what? They got a cemetery. So, I mean, sometimes they are what they are. So I think courts are going to be aware of that, that lines have to be drawn somewhere. But I do think your point is where you start to get at the boundary lines is where, you know, you can sort of potentially die the death by a thousand cuts, because slowly it's like, well, the one next door to it, and then the one next door to it, and the one next door to it. And those are a lot harder to regulate. But again, if you sort of set something up front, like let's take, for example, the eastern side of the township, because I'm fairly confident sewer's not out there yet.
No.
So, you know, there you say, well, if I remember correctly, the health department needs 2 acres, or they want an acre and a half for the septic. So, I mean, you can support that real easily. Say, well, you know, that's you can't, there's no sewer, there's septic. So if you want to develop, it's got to be a 2 acre minimum. And those are the kind of things, if you can say, well, on this side of the road, you know, it's a limited access. There's no, you can't make left-hand turns. So, you know, having a high density where there's going to be a left-hand turn to go to the school, you can sort of, and when you start being able to make those arguments, those are good arguments. If it's just like, well, I, you know.
Those are really issues that really affect the safety of our community.
The health, safety, morals, well, whatever
but,
the.
But I would suggest that that is actually a really great example. So let's say tomorrow, New Albany trenches a sewer through Harlem Township right to the front door of the Lake of the Woods. Mm-hmm. And the next day, the Zoning Commission decides that PRDs are appropriate there because now sewer has come to town. How do we suppose the residents in that section of Genoa Township who built their homes, who live in them, who have an expectation, would feel about that? They might think that the benefit of the bargain had been betrayed because somebody trenched a pipe to them. So I don't think it's without consideration for, just like the farmer who owned the land across from me has an expectation he'll sell it for development and retire on those proceeds, I have an expectation of my neighbors next to me when I move in. The contract works both ways. It's not just a contract of the landowner looking out, it's the contract of his neighbors looking in. And when people come in by, they're encouraged to come to the zoning office and talk about those things. Understanding that being practical is the future. I lived across the street from a 60-acre farm when I moved in. And now it's the estates of Walnut Grove. That's not a bad place to live. I actually don't mind the neighbors. I rarely see them. It's a nice neighborhood. I don't know if traffic's up on Big Walnut Road because they live there or because it's Big Walnut Road. But I don't spend all my time bitching about it. But if my neighbor next to me sold to Target, I might have a question about whether or not I signed up to live next to a mini mall. And that's what I'm talking about, are these big differences in what we're doing. And that somebody always starts it by putting it down first. The township goes, well, once won't hurt. And then it spreads out from there. So when the comprehensive plan is so recently ratified by the trustees and the voters, because they didn't take it back to referendum, I understand they can't. They didn't even try. They didn't ask that question. They didn't do anything with the zoning resolution. They came out. They talked about it. They supported it. Around what we wanted the picture of Genoa Township to be, there is something about that that not only people moving in or people who own land rely on, but people who live here rely on. So well, it's a social contract that has to go both ways. It can't just be a free-for-all.
I understand what you're saying, and you're singing the song of everybody that's ever lived there. My dad grew up a block up from Cleveland Avenue and Morris Road. That was a residential area. I mean, now it's commercial and whatever else.
Well, look at County Line Road through Westerville.
Well, so, I sold a farm that was, or I sold a house that said they backed up to a farm, and that was off Cook Road. And there was, behind the farm was an airport, which turned into Northland Mall, which turned into what it is now. But that's, again, progress had to keep happening. because the growth kept happening in the community.
It does.
And they couldn't just leave it an airport or leave it a shopping center if that's not what the market or the demand was.
Well, the fact is they could have. The fact is that the owner of the land didn't want to. They wanted to maximize value. And it's always the social contract of maximizing value.
But if there's someone that would buy. And that's the supply and demand. Mm-hmm. And that's just how economics work. And that's why today, with baby boomers, we have a change. I mean, there is a big change. There's more baby boomers than under five-year-olds. So when you really think about it, there's going to be a lot more demand for active lifestyles, which doesn't necessarily mean two-acre lots that people have to take care of because they want to be on the golf course. They want to fly to Florida. Now, that has nothing to do with just, you know, a township. It has to do with what's going on in the world, at least in the United States.
And I would suggest to you that Genoa Township has, in the time I've been here, done a lot of work toward figuring out what that looks like. But that doesn't mean it's a zoning free-for-all in this township,
right?
Because a developer's willing to throw money down on somebody and make it really appealing to them. Or somebody's decided to zone their own land in pursuit of maximum
value. Like on Tussock Road, I feel like some of those should not have been maybe approved. But I also see other areas where they're keeping the green space around them to keep it confined, so it does appeal
to the neighbors. But the people who live in those neighborhoods hate them. I mean, that's what's hilarious about it.
I live in one that has 61 homes, and we love our neighborhood. We 61 families live there, and most of us are either single or couples because we don't have a bunch of kids. There's one family with children in 61 homes. We're not generally on the roads during rush hour. And we don't have kids in school.
I'm not debating
but we're paying
that in any way.
Taxes.
And all of that was a choice when you moved into Genoa Township.
But
you knew what school district you lived in. The point is that people who come here are informed consumers. So I'm less concerned about people who buy into Genoa Township getting what they had kind of coming along the lines, as opposed to the flip side of your argument, which was the people who are still here who own 40 or 70 acres and want to know what the future of their property is. And if I were to make a general observation about the comprehensive plan, is that it has changed a bit, but it is largely intact to the deal that was made when it was created a long time ago. So there haven't been any surprises.
Yeah.
There haven't been any surprises for any of those landowners. The
when
only
I
opportunity...
moved here in 1991, and it was not like this at all.
Right.
And then I moved back here in 2005, and it had changed dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
And I've lived in three homes now, and all three of them are different based on my need at that time.
Sure.
I needed a big house. I needed another big
house.
And
you had a selection.
And then I needed a smaller home because my lifestyle changed as I aged. That's just what is happening in the world today.
And I don't disagree with that. But and I'm not saying in any way that I've ever advocated for not zoning property.
Okay.
So what I know you had something to say. What I just was going to throw this out there is zoning has been constitutional for about 100 years now, since the Euclid case in the Supreme Court. You are like the Dutch boy and the dam with the finger when it comes to subdivision. I mean, it's going to happen somewhere or another. I mean, you look at what this country looked like, or the state of Ohio, or the city of Columbus looked like in 1920, and look at it now. I mean, there's just, you are fighting a very uphill battle when you tell someone you cannot put your land to use. And what you were talking about was the highest and best use. You don't necessarily have to give the homeowner the highest and best use, but that's what everybody's looking for,
right?
Is the highest and best
use. That's why you invest in real estate.
So what? So I think
it's not the sole reason why you invest in real estate. That's why you invest in real estate. Lots of people make a home here, and they will get out, and some of them will get out at a loss, and some of them will sell it, and some of them will grant it to their children. But I do agree the pressure is on for the highest possible sale. I mean, we had the same discussion for time immemorial about infill. It's actually my concern about infill. It's not really about the open parcel of 40 acres or 70 acres or 100 acres that the people living next to it have lived next to a farm field and really don't in their hearts have any expectation about that continuing. It's really an argument around infill. It's really about five neighbors getting together and putting up something you never imagined would be built next to you, and that even living in your neighborhood with your 61 neighbors can't protect you from. So I think that it is a balance between the highest and best use, the highest dollar amount. I'm moving out of the township, I'm leaving my land behind, and I don't care what happens on it. to the social contract with the neighbors around what was it like when I moved here and what are my reasonable expectations for growth? Not unreasonable expectations that nothing will happen. I don't disagree with that. But not necessarily, you know, we always joke about we'll build a power plant across the street or something you can't stop. And neighbors would go nuts and you couldn't stop that from happening.
So
right?
The reason I was the point where I was wanted to sort of end up with this, and I know you want to say something too, is that for what it's worth, my sort of just general advice to you is if that is the sort of thing you're worried about in the north and the east and the west, then you probably ought to think about the same tact that was taken to preserve the south, is we have to embrace development somewhere. If we don't do it now, once we have sewer and once we have better roads and once somebody's able to annex and do a type 2, you know, we're going to have a lot less control. But if you're like, hey, you know, we'll work with you to make a 2-acre development profitable or 1.5-acre development profitable, that might be a solution. Because, you know, my point to you is I understand your frustration. And again, Granville Township has gone a different direction with this, but they did this a little sooner than you guys, and I don't know if you could quite do that, is you probably have to sort of take growth as a controlled fact. And where, how you're going to do it. And if it is, we're going to make subdivisions as difficult as possible everywhere on every parcel, I think you're going to have, that's going to ultimately be a losing battle 20 or 30 years from now. And as you get sued, and that's really what my bottom line concern here for you guys, is you guys have to make the policy decisions on how you want to either control the growth or minimize the growth or whatever. But if you're going to, whatever decision you have to make, I'm highly suggesting you need to have some sort of objective basis for it that I could, any lawyer could point to and say, you know, we did it because of the sewer, we did it because of the environment, or there's, you know, some geographical feature of this area, or, you know, this was our commercial district, this was our industrial district, we didn't want high residential around our industrial district. I mean, you can find reasons for it. It's just you need to come up with the reasons why you're doing what you're doing. And that's my biggest concern.
I step back just a little bit, because I sense, and I'm kind of in between, you know, someone with a lot of historical value on the board and relatively new, but my sense is this whole thing and the reason why we're here is because of the single family homes on 3 or 4 acres got together and sold at 20 acres, and then they clustered a bunch of senior housing retirement community on it. It's not the farm.
Right.
Your point is valid. Their value is their value. If Vince Romanelli comes to them on their 3 acres and offers them $400,000, they don't care if it's a farm or not. Your point is valid if you're the neighbor. That's not what you moved in next door. So if we're trying to avoid making the hard decisions, then you shouldn't be on the board, because that's why we're here. And the PRD is there to allow people to bring their unusual piece of property and say, I'd like to change the use to this and put 60 homes on 5 acres. Mm-hmm. And we are voluntarily the ones that have offered our time to evaluate and make the decision on behalf mm-hmm. of the residents. And that doesn't go away. If we're trying to avoid that, that's not going to happen. That's why we're here.
The other option.
So I'm sorry. Let me just.
No, I'm just fine.
As far as I'm concerned, the last meeting is a perfect setup for this, because we evaluated 2 proposed developments. One of them fell under the density in the comprehensive plan. The other one came in over the density in the comprehensive plan. We approved the one that came under using this as a guideline. And we denied the other one using this as a guideline. Now, it has gone to the trustees, and it got tabled. The decision has been made.
Correct.
To me, that is the way the system is designed to work, and that's how we're working it. And we're trying to do all this stuff so we don't have to make hard decisions, but that's why we're here.
Right.
And if 500 people want to show up and influence our decision, that's the way the system is set up to run. And in fact, it worked. They chased away
that's
2
right.
projects that didn't even bring an application because the residents heard they were going to do it. We had, remember the meeting, we had to shut it down because there were too
yeah.
many people, and both applicants never came back with those particular applications. To me, personally, I'm a civil engineer. I go in front of boards for rezones. I really don't see a whole lot wrong with this. And if we're trying to avoid making hard decisions on what the density is going to be, then you probably shouldn't be on the board. So, to bring all this back around, this isn't an option. This has been brought to us by Andrea that this is not an option.
Mm-hmm. Right.
What is the next step? What is the option?
What I was going to say is there's nothing that requires you to have planned districts. I mean, the other alternative is you have straight districts and say, if you want variances, go to the BZA. So I think generally, though, townships in your positions prefer planned districts so they get more control over things. So,
I agree. I know you're not advocating for non-planned.
No,
I know you're making a statement of just back there. But.
Well, no, and that's what I think the feeling I get, and you're not alone, my other townships, is that these planned districts are sort of a headache, but you do get something in return for it. I mean, you do get to control it and set the map and get concessions and things like that. So, but again, I just thought I'd throw it out there. I mean, it's supposed to be to the benefit of the township and controlling growth and having the best thing possible by allowing these planned districts.
So, in your opinion, based on how we handled the last two applicants, using the comprehensive plan as a foundation, does that present a legal problem for the township? And that our decision was really based on this density. Whether it's incorporated in the resolution or not, mm-hmm. Our evaluation was based on this plan.
What you should do is look at the zoning resolution, see what it says are the developmental standards, then you say, all right, what are the things that do not meet the developmental standards? And at that point, then you should kick over to the divergence language and run that analysis. And does this, and I forget what the test is. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, I don't know what it is for the PRDs because we only did the PIDs. So then you run that analysis and you say, well, is a divergence justified here or not? You either grant it or you don't. And then, again, facts are always good in that. So that's how that should run. Now, if you're going to something outside, it should be brought in because that's what the divergence weighing asks you to do. Like, again, in the PID, it specifically asked, what's the adjacent surrounding properties or something like that. So if it asks you to bring something in and you go say, well, we brought it in because that's what the standard said, then you're fine. But if you're bringing in stuff that is sort of outside what the standard's asking you to do or what's in the standards for the development, then that's when potentially you have a problem because then it looks like an arbitrary decision. You're saying, the developer says, this is what I bought the property for, this is what I submitted as the plan, and they're not following their own rules. And as you might imagine, the judges, I think, are always going to be a little biased against you guys anyways because they expect you to be doing it the way that they would run a court. So, I think the more things you do wrong, the easier it is for them to reverse it.
So, and Mark, I'll get to your question about what we do with this particular document in a moment, but I did want to just make some commentary on the prior discussion. So, I think just to recap, what I'm hearing from Jill is we need to be realistic and how we're going forward and set fair expectations, acknowledging that things change, progress is going to happen. I think we can all agree that we can't prohibit growth. We can manage growth, though, and we can dictate how it's going to look, how it's going to feel, and we don't have to give up the farm. To Sandra's point, I also agree with, we also have to be cognizant about escalation and the ever-jumping sure. the density numbers, which I think is a legitimate concern.
Absolutely.
So I think the question for us is, how can we find that balance? In my opinion, what I think we're finding is some of the numbers just may not be realistic. Now, that doesn't mean now we got to jump up to 3 or 4 units per net developable acre, but we may have to, per Andrew's sort of recommendation in his email, adjust that number so it's a little more realistic, number one. And number two, then work so we can make the comprehensive plan and the zoning resolution 100% consistent with one another, so we don't even have a question of which document takes precedence over which. The comprehensive plan is the foundation, the zoning resolution is based on that foundation, and here's the zoning commission enacting the zoning resolution, and by enacting the zoning resolution, you're in effect enacting the comprehensive plan.
Furthering it, I would say.
In regards, yes, furthering it, there you go, that's good words. In regards to residents, obviously their opinions are very important. They moved here, there's a set of expectations. But I do think we need to be cognizant of also the fact that, and Andrew, correct me if I'm wrong here.
I was going to say step this, but out of turn, I already said a lot.
The court is going to recognize the right of the property owner to have fair economic use of their property, not highest and best use, but fair economic value of their property over the property owner who moved here 30 years ago and likes to drive by the trees and see the deer. I mean, I don't mean to sound cold-hearted, but that's just going to be the way it's going to be looked at. Now, we can fight tooth and nail to try to fight against that and maybe try to be the case that gets that overturned, but I'm just not sure that's the best utilization of Genoa's time, effort, and resources. So I guess my recommendation would be try to find that balance that's realistic, but again, is not robbing the residents of what they want Genoa to be. But I think we need to be, again, understanding that sometimes what people want Genoa to be is just not going to be possible in some instances. It's just not going to be.
I would rather that we try to establish a floor or a ceiling or something and allow the divergence process to work just like it always has.
Yes, I agree.
A good proposal has always found its way to completion. But usually what happens is it's a sandbagging game. You start off with your crappiest proposal. And then, over the course of several zoning commission meetings and several trustee meetings, you work your way back to the number that you were economically viable. And we didn't set that standard in the township. That's the standard we get when people come to the door. And if I were meeting with Farmer Bill about whether or not he was going to divide his 40 acres into 8 5-acre lots so that people could move their families out here, then the balance of the process would work like it should. But it doesn't, because it's not Farmer Bill. It's Farmer Bill's developer, who's conditioned the sale on the zoning so that nobody exchanges any money except for what the developer's out until he comes in. And that's a big corporate interest, which is more than capable of defending itself and demonstrates that by being willing to bring a legal action if they don't like the outcome. But I will suggest that that whole process of deciding whether a divergence is required starts with establishing the standard we want. And that standard we want is not the standard the Zoning Commission wants. It's not even the standard the trustees want. It's the standard that, as elected trustees, the Zoning Commissions represent of the residents who live here. And that is the standard that it is within the confines of what the Supreme Court has said about a viable economic use. So I don't agree that Farmer Bill has to keep his 40 acres forever. It's just whether or not Farmer Bill's developer gets to put the screws to us and put 5 acres for 5 units per acre. That's the difference. And it's a balancing act. It's not actually our decision. It's not actually for us to decide any of this.
Yep.
It's for us to figure out what the zoning resolution has to say about it, do our best to interpret that, take in public comment, and give our recommendation and nothing more to the trustees as elected officials to decide whose interests they will support and how far they can go in balancing those. They're the ones who get to operate in that way, not us. We're not quasi-legislative here. We're not quasi-judicial here. We're quasi-nothing here. We're quasi-volunteers who are evaluating and at the pleasure of the trustees providing a recommendation. They don't have to have a zoning commission. There's no rule that says they have to have a zoning commission. They could take every zoning measure themselves. Does 519 require them to have a zoning commission?
I think it does. I think if you have a zoning, you have to have a zoning commission.
That is my recommendation.
Oh, you don't have to have a zoning then. You could just skip all of that. Get rid of all of it. They can take all that to referendum, throw the whole thing out, and make every decision in a weekend afternoon. But they don't choose to do that. There's a reason for the infrastructure, which is to try to set out the basis. Right, to do the heavy lifting here, to distill the issues into a handful of issues, most of which are about, is this a good plan for Genoa Township? And they get to decide if it's a good plan. Right? So the divergence is there for a reason. We can't get rid of it. I wouldn't get rid of it and pass it all to the BZA and then spot zone us all over the township. But you know, we have put forth lots and lots of plans that do not 100% comply with the comprehensive plan because of the recognition that things are not as they're written down. But you and I know that if we change the ceiling to be higher, then the next proposal comes in over the ceiling. Inevitably, it does.
Well, yeah, I agree. The people are always looking to jump.
Wherever the ceiling is set, someone is in three stories.
But I think having a more realistic number gives you a much more stronger defense position should you decide to stand your ground and say, no, we're not going to diverge it and give you that. It's one thing if, you know, we only allow 2-acre lots and they're asking for, you know, say 1-acre lots or something, you know. When you're making a relatively small jump, when they're asking for a big ask, say you're going from 2-acre lots, now you're asking for 2 units per dwelling unit, acre or something, gross. That's a big jump.
As opposed to
but
1.9.
If they can prove that your 2-acre lot maximum is way out of whack and not consistent with market realities and with their sewer here, and that's sort of, I think, what sort of happened at the south end of the township at one point was there was sewer available. The township didn't want to see that kind of development, but it was that kind of development or be annexed, and that they were probably going to go to court, or if they did, they did lose or may have lost. So I think we're now facing that reality in some of the northern portion of the townships where we just haven't seen that pressure before. So I think if your number's higher and they try to jump it, you can more easily defend yourself and say, no, that is a fair market number. That's a reasonable number to ask. Now they're just getting greedy, whereas opposed to us having an unrealistic low density and them coming with the argument of saying, Genoa is so way off base, it's practically a takings at this point. No one can reasonably economic use their property. They may as well just take it if they just want it as open space undeveloped farm field. Then they can have it. So in my opinion, having a slightly higher, more realistic number, and Andrew, correct me if I'm wrong, because you're the one who writes the briefs. Yeah. May put you in a better defensive position to then deny someone who's maybe trying to do that leapfrogging, whereas if you're too low, the door's going to swing back at you. That's my concern, is that if we're too low, it's just going to get thrown out, and it's like he said, the adult entertainment district. Now it's anything goes.
I mean, at the end of the day, the object of government is not to stand in the way of its citizens. By and large. I mean, we establish the government, we have these zoning rules, we have these boards to further the common good and further the common welfare. So, I mean, you sort of have to, sort of looking from the 30,000 foot perspective, you got to take a step back and, like, why are we doing this? Are we doing this to the detriment of our citizens? Are we doing this to be obstructionist? Is that really the purpose and goal of government? So, you know, I think you start with sort of the fundamental question, and then you go from there and you say, as Joe said, my concern as the legal counsel is always, can I defend this if you get sued or if somebody brings a challenge? And somebody like Benton Benelkauser, I mean, I don't know all the ins and outs. I mean, he's called me a couple of times in the past and wanted to talk to me and all that sort of stuff. I know he's called the trustees. I think at one point he even tried to call Carol. So, you know, I can imagine somebody that's that worked up about their property. There's nothing to say that they couldn't just facially challenge the resolution and say, this is so low, like Joe said, that it's either a taking or that it's a violation of the statute. So, I mean, you sort of have to also factor that in, too. I mean, it's yes, I can sort of understand where you don't want to be taken advantage of. I get that. And I sort of refer you back to the first question. But then beyond that, again, as the legal advisor, I'm worried that if it's so draconian and so restrictive that somebody will just jump and say, this is a violation of due process, or you've outkicked your coverage on the statute. So that's why, again, my goal is, and even if you pick the reasonable is a range, right? I mean, you sort of have the far end of reasonable where, like, almost nobody's going to disagree with it, and you have the low end of reasonable where you're like, I can see that, but I don't know. Sort of like, you know, the Ohio State Alabama thing, like, you know, you sort of have this. So I'm not saying that you have to pick the high end of reasonable even. I'm just saying that you have to find reasonable and be able to defend it. And if it's a low number, fine. I don't live here. I've got no skin in the game with the number that you pick. I just want to be able to defend it. If there's a suit brought, I can say, hey, reasonable minds could differ as to whether it should be 1.5 or 1.25. You know, they picked 1.25. That's a reasonable number because of blah, 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 blah. I feel good about that. And that's sort of in essence where I'm trying to lead you guys to whatever decision you make. I would like that to be able to go to court and say it's reasonable because of A, B, C, D, and F, G.
So I think we talked quite a bit about, you know, kind of where we go from here. Mm-hmm.
And that's where I was going to go next, because they all are going
to state this is something we all have to discuss, is we recommend that the Zoning Commission seek professional assistance from regional planning and possible hire independent experts.
Oh, I think we already hired a consultant, right? Didn't the trustees hire a consultant for us?
Peter Griggs.
Well, he's an attorney. Right. Peter's not going to sit here and do all the research marketing best planning practices. Right. He's going to serve Andrew's position and basically just tell you, I can tell you what the law is going to say. I can't tell you what your policy should be.
Right.
He's not going to be your policy maker or
advisor.
He's just going to tell you what he needs to tell you to keep you out of court.
Okay.
So
that was the big takeaway, right, is I think you would jump in.
Mm-hmm. Correct. So I owe Mark an answer because I told him I would. So Mark, I think your options here are, number one, I mean, you could put forward as written, it would be against the advice of counsel and honestly against the advice of staff at this point, put forward the document as currently written and initiated on October 30, 2017. To me, option B is to strip out the portions that seem to be objectionable from a legal standpoint, which would be the addition of Article 5A and the revision to Article 9, and put forward the revisions to the sign code and the definitions. Honestly, from staff's opinion, that's the preferred method, so we don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. We can still get this sign stuff fixed and off your plate so you guys don't have to hear about it anymore. Option C is to just not put any of it forward, and then we're back to square one. With option B and C, obviously it's going to probably require more of these types of conversations of, okay, this is not an option. What are some potential options we do have that we do think may work, that achieve the goals of the commission, the trustees, and the trust of the public to make Genoa a nice place to live, maintain its rural heritage, the stuff from the mission statement. To me, Andrew, correct me if I'm wrong, if you can't think of any other paths, but those are basically the three options probably in a nutshell.
Okay, I'm going to come back again to the last two applications. And the only reason why I want to do that is because I've sat in enough of these rezone meetings to see a lot of frustration, and that went about as smoothly as I've seen for both applicants that got, one got shot down and the other one got approved, and not just based on the raw application, but even the one that got approved had divergence.
Yes.
And there wasn't a single voice of outrage. There was some commentary about why they didn't want it there, and it was a nice application. In my personal opinion, it was a nice application. But I think, again, on both those applications, what helped us, and it helped explain to the audience that was here, the residents that were here, is this comprehensive plan. Because we put so much time and effort in developing this comprehensive plan, involved so many of the residents that are so active here that they had buy-in. So if we reference it, they can't complain about our decision based on the comprehensive plan because they were involved in putting it together. So my question comes down to this basic concept. The PRD, again, is there to allow the farmer to come in and try to maximize the use of his property. If we make our decision and we reference the comprehensive plan in our decision making, is that the legal problem? And that makes that 5A go away.
Well, to be honest with you, I didn't answer that straight on because the Venmar thing is still pending and that could go into litigation.
Right.
And
so don't.
Whatever I say. I know, whatever I say gets mentioned, and I try to be even keeled about it. But
let me be clear, don't make a statement.
I'm not going to. Not about that specifically. So my view is similar to Joe's, is that, you can sort of think about it like the Constitution and then the statutes. You sort of have the Constitution, which lays the framework, and then the statutes are supposed to act in accordance with that. That is kind of how you can view that here, except you can't have any operative law in the comprehensive plan. So if the comprehensive plan talks about these facts, like, again, you hire a developer or you get Mike Frommer to come in here or somebody from his office to talk about sewer, or you get somebody from the engineer's office and you take testimony about that and you guys decide for yourself what are the actual facts. And you bake that in, you put that right in the comp plan. Well, in the suburban residential district, there is sewers available. There's currently, so many trunk lines, there's so many tributaries, blah, 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 blah. There's more capacity in the suburban residential. And you use that for a fact for granting a divergence. That's perfectly fine. So that's, you know, where I'm saying, like, you can bring that in if the divergence standard is asking you to, which probably it's asking you to look at facts. So if it's got good facts, bring that in. Now, where you got to be a little bit careful is the policy. Like, if you're sort of looking out into the future and you say, well, we don't want certain development here, there, whatever, you sort of have to judge the application on its merits. Now, it doesn't mean you have to take a complete blind eye, but the divergent standard is going to probably ask it in a very vague, ambiguous way. Like, does this fit sort of with the neighborhood, environment, whatever? And you sort of have to take it as is. But I don't think you have to be completely ignore the future. So that's where I'd be careful. Facts are great. Policies, you got to be careful with it. Any strict regulations, no. Where it says thou shalt do this or thou shalt not do that. So does that sort of give you a general? I mean, I know,
yeah,
it's.
I think it's telling us that we're not prepared to submit recommend this, and we probably need further counsel. Would you agree?
But can we go forward with the signs?
Yeah, I think I'm okay with.
The only question I have, though, is when we struck the density section out of Article 9, mm-hmm. that seemed to be consistent with the fact that we didn't have it in other places. In other words, that was hurting us to leave that in. So I would have left the removal of that text with the signs amendment. Because what that seemed to create was a standard separate for PRDs with a minimum allowable zone.
That's what she's talking about.
Because we thought it wasn't necessarily consistent with every different area. And I think if you leave striking that section of Article 9 along with the signs amendment, that does some work.
But if we struck 9, that section
references 502A, which we're going to remove.
I would strike the whole thing. And I wouldn't leave the 502A.
Then you leave yourself with no density at that
point. I'm sorry, I didn't. That's the whole thing I don't understand here. So we put density sections in here, and we're told we can't. But I can limit density on every PRD and leave that there. So then we'll rewrite it. Every PRD is now 0.75 acres, which doesn't fall in your restriction for what makes reasonable sense other places. That's the problem is.
Well,
they pointed to one section where we had loaded a density thing into PRD. I don't even remember how it got there. It must have been there forever, because I don't remember us going over that and having a problem with it. But now PRD is the one section that has a density which they'd like to treat as a floor, and we would prefer to treat as a ceiling.
You can do that. Again, a density is completely, you can legislate it, regulate it. So if you wanted to keep that number in there, that's fine. What my two points are, the way that the amendment was going to be, it was going to have, the district was no longer going to be uniform. And that
right.
They should
which
look like
wrong. We need to switch it. We potentially need to look ahead to turning it into a district-based resolution.
And my second point was, whatever number you choose, like I said, has to tie back to one of the bases for zoning. And it's got to bear some sort of whatever it is, reasonable relationship or nexus or whatever the language of the case is. So you got to sort of flip back to whatever 519.12 says or 519.01, the health, safety, morals.
I agree with that. But I find no lack of irony that the case you've chosen to cite here tonight about being concerned about somebody bringing a charge is the exact place where you put down a conservation district. So we have to be careful about not talking out of both sides of our mouth here. As a zoning commission, we need to be careful about that. So I'm fine with advancing the sign amendment. I don't know what we're doing here with respect to the rest of it, but it sounds like we need some more help.
Do we need a motion for that?
Yeah, I guess just for the record, there was no members of the audience here to make a public comment, so there was no public comment on it. Yeah, you would need to make a motion. You probably want to include which sections out of the initiated draft from October 30th, 2017, you are and are not recommending go forward as part of this. And I'd probably just reference the articles because I think they're basically, the articles are, 4 is basically all signs related.
9
is related to the comp plan discussion. 5A is, sorry, jump backwards. It's related to the comp plan discussion, and 18 is related to signs. So 4 and 18 going forward, if you're talking about just doing signs with the removal of 5, the addition of 5A and the revision to Article 9, if that's what you're looking at.
Did you make other revisions to 4, though, in the meantime?
Related to the comp plan zoning resolution discussion, I'm not aware of any changes, and I haven't made any changes to this document since you guys last saw it in October. Usually I try to give you a note if I found some little inconsistency, and I don't see any notes post October 30th.
September 5th was the last time we made a change.
That sounds correct, because I thought we were coming into the September meeting.
If you look at the bottom, it
says that we were going to move this forward, and then this other issue came up and sort of delayed that.
And it appears the same with 18 is September 5th. No changes so far.
I don't see anything but sign-related stuff in 4. Mr. Preby, could you just restate what the articles are that you
Article 10. It's Article 18 instead of 10.
Oh, okay. What do you have there? So Article 4 definitions and Article 18. And that's the sign standards.
Got a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
Roll call.
Ms. Faulkner.
Abstain.
Mr. Preby?
Yes.
Ms. Rudler?
Yes.
Mr. Antonetz?
Yes.
Motion carries 3-0.
So what action do we want to take regarding 5A, the next issue? Do we want to hire a consultant? Do we have enough internal legal counsel that we can use to give us advice, or are we just scratching the whole thing?
I've already started to reach out to the Regional Planning Commission asking about any opinions they have about some of these issues in regards to the density number and how we try to get these two documents into sync. I'll see what they have come back to say. In regards to hiring a consultant, I don't know if the commission has any money specifically appropriated to it by the board for that. Now, certainly the board could do that, or the board could hire them out themselves or go out for that and then basically have them do the work for the commission. I'd have to probably have that discussion with the board, but certainly I think Ms. Falcon brought up some good communities to look at for reference. Violet Township, I know I see them, their name pop up on things in a lot of seminars and stuff, so I think they're going to be a good comp for us probably. I'll look at some of the other townships, just sort of how they're handling some things, but I do think some further discussion is going to have to be had on that matter. And I'll, if you would like, I can report back to the trustees sort of the outcome this evening and where the commission is currently at, and maybe some of the resources the commission could need in order to continue on this venture.
Okay, but you most likely won't be prepared to have that discussion by the next meeting, which is
correct. So the next, and that's one of the agenda items on here, so I guess that's a good segue as any. So your next meeting is Monday the 11th. We did not receive any new applications to appear on your agenda for the 11th. So the question posed to you is, do you want to come back and have these additional conversations on the 11th, or do you feel like you're going to need some more time? I think my thoughts is probably some additional research time is going to be needed, especially I'm going to have to, I report back to the board, their meeting isn't until Thursday, to get, you know, any kind of input or further directive from them on how they'd like to proceed in regards to any potential expenditures. So I think the 11th would be a little early for that. And the trustees' Vinmar, continued Vinmar hearing is on the 12th, so I think it may also be a little prudent to see where those discussions ultimately end up.
Yeah.
For the record, we've got a lot of compliments on our zoning procedure and how the commission handled things and how things have been going with the trustees. I can tell you the majority of the
applicants?
Both the applicants and the public. I can tell you at both the hearings, the public was relatively pleased with how the hearings were going. I think they were very rational and understanding, and there was a very good dialogue between the public and the developer, and they were very complimentary to the developer in some ways. So I think there is content with how the process played out. I do think, though, it's always a good idea to look back and see, you know, what worked, what didn't work, and, you know, maybe where could we improve to maybe avoid some of the pitfalls that we had so we can make it stronger and potentially a little less contentious going forward. So I think the commission, or the decision for the commission in regards as to whether or not you feel it's appropriate at this time to still have the meeting on the 11th or to go ahead and cancel it. But that's totally the commission's decision.
What's our deadline for January?
Similarly, the 11th. So I won't know until that day whether or not you're going to have anything for the 8th. As I emailed to you, there's a potential for one application. Actually, I know of two applications that are very likely for January. Whether or not they both drop, I don't know. I'm pretty confident on one. On the other, I'm not 100% certain on, but there's indications that you could have upwards of two applications on your January agenda.
So what I'm hearing is, I think, attempting to come back together next week is going to be difficult. And conceivably, given the potential of some hearings in November, or January, gosh, medicated, potential special meeting.
Yeah. Obviously, that option is always available to you. That once you know you reconvene in January, you've had some time to think some of these issues over, do some research. Depending on what hearings we have and what sort of business is coming before the commission, there could be a possibility of needing to have some additional special meetings. We'll just have to see sort of how things play out. But I think the immediate question is whether or not the commission feels that there's any value of having a meeting on the 11th.
If you're not going to be prepared, then it's really going to be a waste of time. So,
yeah, I mean, honestly, I think staff could use some additional time to research this, have further conversations with Andrew on some of these topics, see if I can reach out and have meetings with some of the individual trustees.
That's understandable, yes. So let's.
So what are our steps, in the interim, right? So we all have some homework, right?
I think it would be worthwhile for us to investigate at least the three that Sandra...
Feel free to Google and look far and wide. There's nothing special about that.
I would honed in on
townships with density, but that doesn't mean there aren't opposite points of view that we should try to look at.
If you see anything that particularly you think is important to us, we'll look at it. If you'll let Joe know so he can pass it on to us.
I will.
That would be great, because I really appreciate that.
Well, it sounds like, you know, that was a surge of activity on your part of 30 minutes that you were able to pull that.
But then you have to sit down and read it and parse it and understand what choices they made beyond that.
Yeah,
so
I
what
appreciate
did they
that you
give
did
away?
That in that short
I just
amount
wasn't
of time.
Sure how complicated it would be for us to find anything.
Right.
So anyway, so that doesn't to say in those documents we won't find that they made other choices or made other things. But when you look at their zoning map, they really set their districts residential and commercial, but also high density, medium density, low density. And they've gone to the point of expressing why they picked those densities in those places, which I think gets back to Andrew's point, which is that what he points to in their resolution, not in their comprehensive plan, but in their resolution to say, this is what's going on. What I didn't do was pull their comprehensive plan, if they had one, and compare what they did in those different documents in different ways. Because gutting our document of the density sections for the comprehensive plan and putting what we think works inside the resolution means that the comprehensive plan really becomes the roadshow guide to Genoa Township. And I'm not sure that's a very interesting document. Like, statistics and all that kind of crap could have been put into the marketing piece that we threw out at the very beginning of your tenure, Joe, because we didn't think it had enough in it. So we'll just have to decide if it's worth the effort to continue that, depending on what that brings to the table. So I didn't pull each of those townships I didn't pull their comprehensive plan to see where they drew the lines and how they made those documents work together. I didn't do a full search to see how often it referred back to it, although in at least one of them, I think it was the Clark County document, it said, don't quote me on that, it was one of the three, said, and you can refer to this density information in our comprehensive plan. So we're not the only ones who've done that, and all of them had been recently updated. So I didn't look at anything back from 2007. These were all 2014-ish or later revisions, most of which had lived a long, long time. So maybe there's something for us to learn from their history or where they went. And then there's got to be countless other examples. But I stayed inside the state of Ohio. Plenty of good stuff in the state of Pennsylvania to look at, too. They overrun the web with their stuff. But I would imagine you know. Ohio Township, by the way. When you put in Ohio Township, you get Ohio Township.
You get like the Beaver County one.
In Pennsylvania. So I stayed in the state of Ohio. But I think there are things we can learn. And there might be things we like and don't like. But those were just three quick ones which attempted, right on their face, to talk about what kind of density they need.
I think that's a good idea.
We were intimately involved in Jefferson Township. I don't know if you're familiar with Jefferson Township.
On the west side?
Yes. Gahanna.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I know. Yeah.
Just to
say. I grew up in Plain Township. Oh. So
they formed a water and sewer district. So what that does is allows them to control water and sewer, development of water and sewer, which drives real estate.
Absolutely.
And that's a great example of a township that has maintained rural. I mean, it is so rural. Horses and
They got that the horse development, that horse base.
And strangely enough, still plenty of money in property taxes for whatever they need. If you limit yourself to building McMansions and good stuff like that, and that's no disrespect to people in Jefferson Township. I want to be just like them, but I don't want to live there. So,
well, Mason is some of the townships in Mason are the same way. I mean, they just
decided they weren't going to be like their neighbors. And they set out and did that. And if there's lessons we can learn from that, that's what residents want, not what I want, not what Mark wants or what Jill wants or what Joe wants. If that's what the residents want, then we should do our best work to try to find a good balance.
Right. And we're talking a lot about New Albany, but it's really Columbus
that's
causing the problem, not New Albany. Because I lived in New Albany, and I can tell you that
all the apartments are Columbus.
All the apartments are Columbus. All the heavy density is Columbus. Right. It's not Plain Township.
But that's the problem Olentangy has. It's so wide, and it reaches down the Polaris corridor and down the 23 corridor.
All the way up to 23.
And they get what they get from that. Mm-hmm. And that is creating huge problems. And we're all paying in against it. But it doesn't mean that I necessarily want 25 extra neighbors.
But I see that happening in Berkshire Township, too.
It's a balance.
Concerned about Berkshire Township as much as I am Sunbury.
Yep. Well, I mean, all of it. All of it's pressure. All of it's pressure. And there are different things. So,
it's funny. Probably why we... So
you're deferring the December 11th meeting, Mr.
Right.
Chairman?
Yes.
Okay, so we're officially canceling that meeting?
Okay. That sounds good to me. Okay.
And then can we get to the other business here? Because contrary to popular belief, the clock stopped, which I find amazing. It stopped in the middle of our discussion.
It was just so riveting.
There's something really prophetic.
It was working earlier. I actually
it
had
was.
It was stopped before the meeting started, so I fixed it and got it going again. But obviously, we may be time for a new clock in
right
the hall.
Right there at 7:24.
So the next discussion is the vacant chair. Is that our discussion, or is that the township trustees?
No, I mean, it's your commission, so you guys pretty much control who's the chair and the vice chair. So it's really going to be up to you as to whether or not
I'm
going to have total new re-elections, whether or not you just want Mark to just serve as acting chair until March 31st when you reorganize. That's totally up to you.
We did that when Connie left. We just asked the vice to step up and do the job, which Bill did. I don't see any reason to hold elections until April unless otherwise feel differently, because you don't know the composition of the board until April. And we may get a person coming in.
Yeah, I'm
with
you.
And then just by your bylaws, should Mark not be here? I think it defers to seniority, at which point it'd be Ms. Faulkner. Then
if people want to set a vice so that doesn't happen, I'm perfectly happy with that. So maybe I want to reevaluate that.
Maybe look at your rules of order.
If Mark is going to be unavailable, I will also simultaneously have an emergency that will make me unavailable. So that's my commitment to you.
So we'll just hold the positions right now. By the way, I think that's perfectly fine and reasonable.
You don't have very far to go.
No, you don't.
We're not going to have a meeting in the rest of December. We'll have one in January. We may have another seat filled, though, right? The trustees may act.
We will fill a seat.
And yours is up for reappointment in March, correct?
Yeah, I don't know when they're going to fill Mr. Jackson's vacant seat. I mean,
they're taking applications until when?
Well, they said the end of the month, but we haven't got the announcement out yet because I still have to work with the communications director.
So you're not even going to close taking in applications probably till the end of the year because you want to give people a chance with the holidays. So that means we won't even see a seat.
Yeah, it won't be until early next year that you probably have that seat filled anyway. So
yeah.
By that point, you're right. You might as well just wait till April and
reorganize. Unless it creates a stoppage for business, and I think anybody here can. And Tara's normally here, and Jet and Dave's normally here. So, you know, you guys all know how.
Yeah, I mean, we'll lots of communities only have one alternate as opposed to two alternates, so I think we're fine right now.
That's just Antoinette's screen.
That's all the business I had for the commission this evening. So. Is there something you'd like to
Andrew, address anything before we close out?
No, I, you know, for what it's worth, I know that I may not have been the most popular person when I've thrown a flag on your plate, but I appreciate the time and consideration that you've given to it. And really, at the end of the day, like I said, I don't live here. I'm not trying to drive the way that you guys handle your resolutions. My goal is to make sure whatever you write, we can defend. And you guys, when you make a decision, I can go into court and defend it or get it, win it on appeal. So that's
it's not a popularity contest, right? So you're, in my opinion, just giving a really sound judgment from my technical expertise. So
I just
much appreciated because, we want to equip you, and so to speak, in the questions like you highlighted where you can go down that punch list and be as defensible as possible, right? So thank you for the short notice.
Not a problem, and you know, again, at the end of the day, you guys sort of have you live here, you know what's appropriate, and I'll do my best to defend it if you give me the best I can work with. So.
And I'll just echo Andrew's sentiments. I mean, that's where staff's coming from too. I just want to put you guys in the best defensible position to be successful, achieve your goals, but still, at the end of the day, make sure we're going to be in an okay place.
On that, we should make a motion to adjourn, Mr. Chairman.
I have a motion to adjourn,
Mr. Chairman. I move to adjourn this meeting at 8:45 p.m.
Second.
Ms. Faulkner? I'm calling the roll, but I guess you could do a unanimous vote if you would like.
Ms. Faulkner says yes.
Ms. Faulkner says yes. Mr. Breeby?
All in favor.
Ms. Rudler? Yes. Ms. Randinich? Yes. All in favor.